Hello, I'm James Sandy, and this is the New Curiosities Box, a burst of arts and culture from Birmingham and beyond. In this show, we catch up with Birmingham photographer and creative force Gary Lindsay Moore as he launches an intriguing new experience in the city. A full archive of shows to date, links, and further information can be found on our website, switchradio.co.uk/James Sandy. Now, for most of us, the current situation means change. And so this show, The New Curiosities Box, will be paused from April. However, to respond to that creative need in all of us and to help support the city's cultural sector, a new fortnightly project is forming. If you'd like to learn more and work out how you might help and get involved, you can go to www.theunseenswerve.blogspot.com. We start with photography. Gary Lindsay Moore recently launched his Doudoir experience, which is helping men in the city explore confidence, body image, and the creativity of change through the truth of the lens and a determination to ensure that people are being real. So I'm with Gary Lindsay Moore.
Yep.
I'll get that right.
And, yes.
Gary, you're a lot of things.
Yes.
But I think fundamentally you're a photographer.
Primarily a photographer.
Is that where you start? Is that where you started, maybe?
Oh, where I started my creative bent, yes, with photography. A long time ago, I did photography in Gloucester in 1978 after doing 2 years of Art Foundation in Nuneaton.
And there's something quite specific about some of the photography you're doing at the moment around a kind of male...
Indeed, yes, indeed. It's a slant, the male slant on boudoir, which boudoir is a sort of kind of cheeky, maybe erotic aspect of female photography, but for more regular girls rather than the let's use the term Instagram ready people with the bleached teeth, the Botox and all that kind of business. It's for regular curvaceous people. Now, Doudoir is the male version of that, but I'm going to say Doudoir is not so heavily slanted on being erotic. It's more of a like a fun side to it. So it's just bringing out the aspect of the character rather than showing off a washboard stomach, rippling muscles, again, the whitened teeth and the Botox and all that kind of business.
And it's quite a clever name, I think, Doudoir, because not only do you remember it,
yeah,
but also it's kind of, I suppose, in some ways challenging that sort of stereotypical image of masculinity.
I think so. I mean, I've done a fair few Doudoirs over the last few years. I've tried to, with some of them, actually tone down full on, maybe to the kind of sexual side of it, to a much more gentler thing, and on some of the pictures, one of the lead pictures on my website is one of my absolute favourite pictures, is of a merman, which was just one of the most incredible fun things I've ever done.
And I was going to ask you about that. So what's the context of that picture? Because some of your work, kind of, I guess there's an exploration of not fantasy, but sort of.
Oh yes,
mythology, maybe,
I would say fantasy, more fantasy than mythology. I don't like to categorise myself too firmly in the one thing, but I think fantasy. I've done a lot of things like cosplay over the years, so you do find that translating into that kind of thing. So which is it's that. The fun element and putting yourself into a different space that maybe you're interested in, because I think it's yet to happen with a Doudoir for myself, but maybe something like a superhero one. But the merman one was just my, let's say, model client lived in Somerset, lived near beaches. When we were talking about it, it was like, well, I've seen some pictures of guys doing the merman thing. I thought, well, I'll take it to a next level, as rather than it, because you can go online and you can buy a mermaid tail from eBay, no problem. So I thought, well, I'm going to put my own spin on it. So I made the merman tail, and I also made the fin myself, and I wanted it to be a little bit crazier. So there was lots of different elements like jewels in it, and the original plan was to not shoot in January when it was so cold. It was to shoot later on in the year, but it just the way things happened. But I was going to go for an afternoon shoot when the sun was going down, because the actual fin lights up. I love things like that. Any sort of, I like, well, I've got lots of things that light up. I've got some antlers that I've decorated with red glitter that light up, which is, I like things that just, I'd wear them myself. I like to show off. So
that idea of cosplay, it's, yep, kind of costume and dressing up.
Yep.
And that, I guess, to me, that kind of links to an idea of, I suppose, sort of freedom and liberation.
Yeah, yeah.
And confidence.
Oh, absolutely. Because I wear what I wear. I'm a bit of an attention seeker. I like to look snappy. I like to look smart. I will wear different things. I have no problem wearing silver jackets, leopard skin boots, and things like that. That I come from the old punk sort of, say, genealogy that did dress up. It was our calling card. To me, it's a bit, it's like creating another identity over the top of who I am now. Cosplay is a bit like that. It allows you to go into another realm and be a stronger person, more confident person. So I that's why I kind of encourage people to use props and things like that. The merman outfit was quite a good one, because you can just say kind of do, and there is a reason why you can be lying on a beach in January with your top off, you know, it's the things like that. It's just, it gives you that sort of kind of reasoning to be where you are doing what you're doing at the time.
And it kind of helps take the pressure away, I guess, of this idea of a perfect body image.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And I think one of the things that's interesting about your work, I mean, there's many things interesting about it, but when I sort of talk to people about some of the things that you do and some of the concepts you explore, they naturally say, well, why do men need that? You know, it's a very female, or it has been a very female-focused agenda, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. But I tell you something, women are good about talking about it, supporting each other, going out and doing it. Men are a little bit more insular, but hey, men have exactly the same issues as women. We're all equally as anxious about hairline, greying hair, that we've got a dad bod and things like that. And I have all of those things, yet I'm over it. It doesn't worry me. It's not one of the things that I find that are anxious, but a lot of guys do. And if you want to get into, it's one of those things, say with cosplay, moving into that kind of thing, is that you can cover yourself up, and you can do things like, as you see on the Big Bang Theory, when they're all cosplaying, they are often cosplaying. Sheldon cosplays the Flash, and the outfit he's got all fake muscles and things like that. So it's just put him into a different character, taking away from himself. But guys have exactly the same issues, body issues, with women. Obviously, the obvious things are, you know, different, but you know, as we get older, things droop south, get a little bit saggier, you get a little bit wrinkly here, there and everywhere. Me personally, I'm not inclined to want to spend hour after hour after hour in the gym 6 days a week. I have other things I'd rather be doing. Great, those men and women that do it, good for them. I've done it. I did have a gym membership for quite a while. I did go quite regularly. I find it really boring. I'd rather do much more other things, fun things like take photographs. But yeah, men have the same anxieties and worries about the way they look and the way that they're perceived by other people. And I hear it so much, that people feel they are being judged by other people, when I don't think they really are. I hear people saying, oh, it gave me a funny look, but they could be giving you a funny look because they really, really like you, you know? So it's, we don't have little sort of kind of not always those signals are really, really obvious. So if we've just sort of stopped worrying about things like that and have a bit of fun with yourself.
And do you find, I guess naturally, that the camera, a bit like sticking a microphone in someone's face,
yep,
it has a very focusing effect. You know, people become conscious of the camera.
It can do, but I think if you're a good photographer, you can almost make the camera bit disappear. I like connecting with people through the camera, and I think that is one of the sort of kind of USPs, the unique selling points of me, is that I like to be able to connect with people. I'm not there barking orders at them and things like that. I feel that I can coax with them, and I can make them forget that sort of the fear aspect of having a camera in front of them. For instance, I have an older sister who is terrified of cameras, and she will do the automatic things that people do, which is the stiff neck, the stiff shoulders, and you get the crazy look in your eyes and the white fiery look on there. And it's one of those things, if you can talk to people and you can just make them ideally forget that you're actually there that's taking photographs.
Now, let's talk about Birmingham.
Yes.
Birmingham's an important place.
Oh, and absolutely.
I think as a canvas and as a kind of, I guess, an inspiration for you, it's informed a lot of your work?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, as just a regular non-people photographer going out, I love doing street photography. I love taking pictures. I think the architecture around Birmingham is absolutely marvellous. I think it's a real diverse city. It's more compact than London, so you can get around a lot quicker. And whereas me, I don't like doing a great deal of walking, which I think is, you know, quite essential in my life. But yeah, I love Birmingham as a backdrop. And I have used it many, many times. And obviously we have around Digbeth and around the Custard Factory, which I'm going to say, photographers, you've overused it. Let's try some other places. And there's loads.
Okay, so that's a bit about place. Let's talk about some of the things that you do in terms of the kind of language of photography, if you like. So you capture, I think, we talked a little bit about mythology and fantasy.
Yep.
You know, fantasy perhaps was the word that you emphasised. But you do a lot of kind of what I would call life events.
So yep.
I don't just mean weddings and funerals.
No.
But you do a lot in terms of celebrating life, but also kind of capturing perhaps end of life and people's
yes,
journey.
Yes, I have done that quite recently a couple of times. And one of them, a lady that was well known in Birmingham, she approached me. She had a very aggressive neck cancer, which at that time she was given, I think it was a few months left, but actually survived about a year afterwards. Survived enough to have a pre-funeral wake, which I'm very proud to have attended as well. But she wanted herself to be seen in Birmingham City Centre, not necessarily in Birmingham City Centre, but in Birmingham itself, Birmingham as a backdrop, because she did a lot of voluntary work for the city, but not hiding the fact that she'd got this quite large tumour in her neck, although it was affecting her, that it wasn't affecting her. It wasn't actually an incredible experience, because in the 2 to 3 hours that we were actually taking photographs, the way that she connected with people that we bumped into in the street, we met a preacher from Cincinnati, and there's shots with him, and then there was just random people everywhere, which was so nice. And it's just her ability to connect with people was absolutely amazing, and to be a witness to that and to record it was absolutely an absolute pleasure and a joy. It was a very, very emotional journey. And then afterwards I went along to a pre-funeral wake which she held, and that had family, and it was a massive turnout. It was absolutely incredible. And so it's very, very much like kind of life affirming. And when you're sort of thinking, oh my God, everything's pretty rubbish at the moment and everything like that, I got to meet somebody that was going to die. And I think there was a time when I was speaking to her, she did say to me that she was officially classed as dead. There's things like, you know, that she couldn't do, not just because of physically, but because that, you know, she's like a non-person, which is a very unusual state to be in. And we were communicating right up until about 2 weeks before she died. She did spend a week in the John Taylor Hospice, who I've subsequently kind of made contact with, and then I think it was 3 weeks ago, it's one of the things I do like to give back, so I've given back what I initially was doing, like an auctionable shoot, but they turned it round into, it was a last birthday shoot of a woman with terminal breast cancer with her daughter, and it was the hospice and John Lewis had arranged a makeover for the daughter and the mother. I went along and shot it, and I am just waiting for the by the time this goes out, the book should have arrived that I've put the images into, which I'm going to present to both of them for the daughter to have as a keepsake of her mother's last birthday. So I like to be able to do things like that. Sometimes it's a little bit difficult, but photography not always about the good times. It's not always about the births, the weddings. Sometimes recording things about death, death and decay, which I kind of like when I take photographs of the cities, the destruction and the decay and the change, things like that. I do like the transition of time within people as well.
Back now to our conversation with Birmingham artist and photographer Gary Lindsay Moore.
Let's talk a bit technically about your trade.
Oh, right.
Challenges, if you like, in terms of photography in this kind of, you know, in a multimedia age, really.
Yes.
I think everybody thinks they can take a photo.
They do.
It's very easy to take a photo now because most people have a camera.
It's lost that mystique. The digital age is a very, very wonderful thing. However, sometimes people take photographs and they're all raving about them. I'm by no means, I am not a technical photographer. I'm more of an emotive photographer. I like to be able to feel the moment. I'm not going to lie, I wing it a lot of times. And this situation, but I like to go into different situations. And I think one of my sort of kind of ethos is with my general life is this faith in chaos. We live a very, very chaotic existence. We by nature are quite chaotic. You can plan all you want, but things can change. And I like to be able to think, well, I can turn on a sixpence, and if I'm shooting something that's going on in front of me, but my ears are listening out for something that could be going over my left shoulder or my right shoulder, and if it's all of a sudden we're in semi-darkness, I can handle things like that. It's just one of those things. I was trained a very, very long time ago when I left further education and I went out into the photography world as an assistant. I was very, very fortunate to work alongside, well, I was hired by this amazing photographer called Sandra Lasada. She won't be on the tip of everybody's tongues, but she did do the 1980s Vogue Complete Beauty book photography. That was very, very technical. But then she also took me on this tour of around some of the UK, taking photographs for a breastfeeding book, which was like a total polar opposite. And Sandra herself was very, very well known for portrait photography, portrait photography of the celebs of the day, Stephen Burkhoff and Vanessa Redgrave, and things like that. There's a book called Private Pictures, absolutely amazing. She taught me so much that one of the things she taught me about interacting with people. There's a few techniques that she taught me, which I put into practice, which I'm certainly not going to reveal just right now. Come and have a photo shoot with me and I'll show you what I'm talking about. And it's all to do with posture and that kind of business. She was a very, very tough woman to work for. It was back in the day when we had absolutely everything that she shot, you hand wrote notes for as you were going along, also doing your job as an assistant. And then throughout the course of the time that I was working in London as an assistant, I did get to work with an amazing fashion photographer called James Wedge, and then another name which was very synonymous with 80s music performers, photography, an Australian lady called Robin Baich. And if you go back and you look at pictures of Toya when she was in a bit, a lot of those pictures are done by Robin. And the very, very famous Steve Strange melting face one. I didn't work on any of those pictures, unfortunately, but I did get booked with her a couple of times. So I did see kind of a great variety. And photography back in the analog days, it's way different to what it is now. You don't have the opportunity to rescue pictures as much as you do now. It's all wonderful having your face heavily retouched, but I do think reality should prevail. And one of the things I pride myself in that I don't do a great deal of is I don't do a great deal of photoshopping, ideally because I've got it right, but I'd rather have a client that would be happy being real rather than having their nose trimmed down so it's like a shark's fin and their skin smoothed out like it's a billiard ball. I gravitate to that sort of person, that sort of clients, than any other. People being real is what I'm all about. Wrinkles, scars, bingo wings, flabby stomachs and things like that, I'm all good with.
All the glorious things.
Absolutely, the real stuff. Yeah.
Gary, just finally, I just wanted to ask you if there's a moment in your life or an image, perhaps, that kind of got set the spark in terms of your photography.
Oh yeah, yes. The real total inspiration was a lady photographer called Sheila Rock, and the picture that really, really inspired me was the one of Jordan, not Katie Price Jordan, the punk. Jordan Mooney, an amazing woman. She was an iconic image in the punk era, and there's a picture of her standing in the doorway of the World's End shop, which was then called Sex, with a man in a business suit giving her that look. And to me, I saw that picture and I thought, I want to do things like that. I want to be that photographer. And I'm fortunate enough to own a number two edition from that shoot. There's an image that I've got with Jordan dangerously smoking inside the shop, leaning against the jukebox, smoking a cigarette, with all the clothes around it. That image has never ever been published, but I've got a number two of it, which I'm really. But yeah, Sheila Rock, she's amazing, wonderful woman, and I've met her two or three times. Total inspiration. And her book, Tough and Tender, blows your mind every time.
Excellent. Gary, it's been great to talk to you.
Awesome.
Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
For more information on Gary's work and the Dudoir experience, you can visit www.garylindsaymoorephotography.co.uk. And now it's time to close the box and to leave it locked until another day. In the meantime, my thanks to Gary, the Rep Birmingham, M7PR and Mac Birmingham. Don't forget to check out our new project at www.theunseenswerve.blogspot.com to find ways you can help curate and crowdsource some community radio in the interim. The New Curiosities Box was written and presented by me, James Sandy, and is a King of the Buttons production for Switch Radio.